Hello, this is J.P. Kirsch, and I'm your moderator. I'm here with State Senator Maria Collette, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Collette, press *3 at any time on your telephone's keypad. Now let's welcome Senator Maria Collette.
Thank you so much, J.P., and thank you to all of the area residents who are participating on today's town hall phone call here. I'm Senator Maria Collette. I'm hosting this live telephone town hall where we'll be discussing the COVID-19 vaccine with my guests, Montgomery County Commissioner Dr. Val Arkush, Bucks County Commissioner Bob Harvey, and President and CEO of Doylestown Health, Mr. Jim Brexler. After a brief introduction and update from each of our panelists, we'll spend the majority of our time answering your questions. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press *3 on your phone. Once again, I'm very grateful for all our guests taking the time out to be with us this evening. I know my constituents have a lot of questions for all of you. First, I'm going to have each of you provide a brief introductory update for us. Let's start with Commissioner Arkush. If you could just give us a sense of how the county rollout has been progressing and how our callers can get an appointment with the county for a vaccine.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much, Senator Collette, for the opportunity to speak to all of your constituents, half of whom are my constituents, so it's a great opportunity. So here on the Montgomery County side of the Senator's District, things are going pretty well. As many of you know, we were not getting nearly enough vaccines for a number of weeks, and we've had a lot of pent-up demand here in the county. But thankfully, over the last couple weeks, we have gotten a lot more vaccine into the county, and I want to share some good news with people. If we look at the percentage of our population that's 65 years of age or older, so obviously these are the folks that are most at risk of being hospitalized or having a very serious case of COVID, we now have 87.5% of people who are 65 years of age or older either partially or fully vaccinated. So that's some really good news. We're really seeing those numbers tick up every week. And when we look at the people who are 16 years of age and older, we have 55% that are partially or fully vaccinated. So we're on our way and to really helping make our whole community safe. There's two ways to make an appointment to get a vaccine in Montgomery County. The first is to go online at www.montcopa.org/COVID-19vaccine. So montcopa.org/COVID-19vaccine. Or you can call our hotline, and that number is 833-875-3967. That's 833-875-3967, and that number is staffed Mondays through Saturdays.
Great. Thank you so much, and we'll put that information on our website as well in case anyone didn't get a chance to write that down so that they'll still be able to reach out and make those appointments. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Arkush. Remember, to all of our listeners on the line here, if you have a question for me or any of our guests, be sure to press *3. Next up is Bucks County Commissioner Bob Harvey with our Bucks County update. Thank you so much for being here, Commissioner Harvey.
Thank you, Senator Collette. I appreciate the opportunity. It's glad to be on the phone with you and Jim Brexler and Commissioner Arkush. For Bucks County, I'll give a little bit of an update similar to what you just heard about from Monco. We have four clinics open right now in Bucks County. The three community college campuses, Upper Bucks, the main campus, and then Lower Bucks, and also Neshaminy Mall. Those clinics are open for anyone. You don't have to live in those areas. We are hoping to open up a clinic in Warwick Township on York Road. That was a clinic that was supposed to open last week. It was going to give exclusively Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but then, of course, with the pause that came from the federal government, we've obviously paused that operation. We're hoping to open that up as soon as we find out what's going on with that vaccine, which we hope to hear about tomorrow from the federal government. So far in Bucks County, We are at, as of last night, we are at about 46, a little over 46% of adults in Bucks County have gotten at least one dose. A little over 28% of adults in Bucks County are fully vaccinated. And we are, we do have on our website at buckscounty.org. If you go, you'll see a vaccine information button. You can click there and you'll be able to register for your dose right there on that page. You also can use the phone number, and I'll read this a couple times for people who want to write it down. This is for our health department, 1-800-383-0371. And again, that's Bucks County Health Department. That's 1-800-383-0371. And they can help you make an appointment there if you don't have the ability to do it online. That's also a good number to call if you know of somebody, if you yourself are homebound or have difficulty getting out, you won't be able to get to a vaccination site, you can use that number, or you can use that number if you know of somebody who has a situation where they're not able to get to a vaccination site because of some kind of illness or medical problem. We do also have available, and this is also on the vaccination page of our website, for senior citizens who need a ride to one of our vaccination sites in Bucks County, Bucks County Transport will provide round-trip free transportation to Bucks County residents going to a Bucks County appointment. Rides are available Monday to Friday between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. And I'll give you the number for Bucks County Transport, and that is 888-795-0740. Again, that's Bucks County Transport, 888-795-0740. And again, it is just for Bucks County residents going to an appointment in Bucks County. And it doesn't have to be a county site. In other words, it doesn't have to be one of the four that I mentioned. If it's a Rite Aid or if it's a pharmacy somewhere or even your doctor's office, if you're not able to get there yourself via car or have somebody take you, Bucks County Transport will do that. And so that's the information we have so far, and looking forward to some of the questions you have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner Harvey. And again, if you weren't able to write that information down quickly, we will also post that to my website as well, so you'll be able to access it. Again, a reminder to everyone, if you have a question for me or any of our guests, press star 3. And finally, I'm really honored to welcome Jim Brexler. He's going to speak a little bit about the role of Doylestown Health in vaccine distribution and education in our region. Thank you so much for being here, Jim.
Thank you, Senator. It's really an honor to be on this call with you and with your constituents and to be here with the commissioners to hear the latest updates for both Montgomery and Bucks County. And that is really good news. There are vaccination sites opening up, and that should make all of your constituents feel very excited, which was not the case at the early stages of this, where it was very challenging relative to even get supply of vaccine, much less have sites that you could get to. And I know that created great angst amongst a number of people. Doylestown Health has been involved in the vaccination process from its inception. At the state, we were one of the early vaccination sites. We had the super cooling capability for the Pfizer vaccine that allowed us to be one of the early sites to start delivering vaccine. And we started at the hospital. We expanded to a second site at our urgent care center. Today, for the last several weeks, we've been administering approximately 1,000 vaccinations on those two sites. All through scheduled appointments. And we also have gone into very specific areas of at-risk populations to go in and do sort of, SWAT vaccination clinics for folks that are more at risk and more difficult to travel. So we've been very proud of that. This week, actually, we will surpass 60,000 vaccines administered at Doylestown Health. The process initially started with us taking the vaccine allocation and then giving slots to our to all of the physicians in our entire medical staff that they could prioritize the highest risk people to get vaccinated. We had an algorithm that they worked with in the practices. They could get to their patients, and then they got them scheduled. And so we started at the highest risk and worked our way down in that view. Now it's opened up to everyone. Today, we do have a call-in line that you can still call for getting a vaccination appointment. That number is 267-810-1820. That's 267-810-1820. And also on our website, BillstownHealth.org, you can also find a reference to other areas, other places that could be vaccinated, which will give you other options available. One thing I would like to add, Senator, to what's going on with vaccinations these days, the good news is that there's lots of vaccination sites. And in the last several weeks, many people have found a home for getting their vaccine. But they also, many of folks signed up on multiple sites, hoping that they could get in sooner rather than later someplace. What that's meant is that we're in the early stages. Every slot we had was filled by somebody. We had there were no shows, if you will, for our vaccination appointments. Today, as people have found other venues to get their vaccine, they may have signed up with us, and we had them scheduled out several weeks in advance, but they've been able to get their vaccine at another location, which we're thrilled about. That's great. But we would really encourage folks to cancel the vaccine appointments that you have had scheduled if you get it someplace else. Otherwise, we have staff that are all set to go, but people are not showing up. And that's a little bit of a challenge we're trying to avoid as we move forward. To cancel a vaccination, that we actually have a new email address that people can go on, which is simply cancel COVID vaccine, no dots, just cancel COVID vaccine at dh.org. And you can just leave us an email saying that you were happy to have found another site. Or you can call that same vaccination line, 267-810-1820. And just leave us a message that says that you have been able to get another appointment. With that, Senator, I'll look forward to answering questions as well. We're the fight to fight this disease is the great defense is to get everyone vaccinated, and I'm loving to hear the percentages going up. But it's not gone, and so we are still taking care of COVID patients, although the numbers in Bucks County have leveled off and are starting to come down. And I haven't heard the numbers out of Montgomery County, but I think we may be beginning to round the bend a little bit here in this fight.
Thank you so much, Jim. And yeah, I'm really encouraged by the numbers that we're hearing this evening as well. You know, I also just want to take a moment to emphasize to the constituents who are on the line that they're always welcome to reach out to my office with any questions and concerns, you know, about the vaccine that we're talking about this evening, but any other issues that you might be having, unemployment, anything else, and we'll do our very best to assist you. My staff and I are still working remotely, but we're ready to help in any way that we can, and you can reach us at Senator Collette at pasenate.com, or you can call my office at 215-368-1429. Now, I don't have to tell anyone here that's on this call that the first few months of Pennsylvania's vaccine distribution were extremely frustrating and challenging as millions of people that were in the phase 1A category struggled to get appointments. And communications from our Department of Health at the state level were often unclear or unsatisfying. And so through it all, I've worked really hard to amplify your concerns and advocate on our district's behalf to establish a better and more equitable rollout. And I'm thrilled that our vaccine supply has increased and that Pennsylvanians 16 and older are now eligible to get their shots, but we do still have a lot of work to do to make sure that we're reaching vulnerable and underserved members of our community. I've now visited more than a dozen local vaccine clinics myself. I've volunteered as a nurse, vaccinating residents at many of them, and it's really incredible to see the dedication of our county health departments, our local providers, our volunteers, and those of you who have enthusiastically gotten your vaccine to protect yourself and our community. The goal of tonight's event is to answer your remaining questions about vaccine safety, securing appointments, and preparing for your appointment, and more. So let's get into some of those questions. I'm going to start with our panel asking a couple that my staff and I have been hearing and have received via email in preparation for this evening's event. And the first question I have, and I know that Commissioner Harvey, you talked a little bit about this, so I'm going to kick it to you first here. What is the latest that we're hearing about the temporary pause on the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? And, you know, can any of our panelists give us some indication of the message to residents who have expressed concern about the safety of this vaccine or our other vaccines after this recent development?
Well, certainly, like everybody else, we were taken a little bit by surprise by the pause last week. We had only given out a couple hundred doses of Johnson & Johnson in Bucks County through ourselves. The Bucks County Health Department had done that. We have not seen or heard of anybody in Bucks County who we administered the shots to having any kind of difficulties, you know, thank God. We're certainly hopeful that whatever, you know, the federal advisory boards decide tomorrow, there'll be some kind of, hopefully, decisions made tomorrow will give us some clarity. We have taken anybody that had an appointment last week, we offered them the chance to get Pfizer because we had a few extra doses of Pfizer, and those doses were given out Tuesday and today, about 1,500 of them at our Warwick site. We had acted like, I know Monco had done a similar thing. They had asked, like we did, the state when the Johnson & Johnson pause was made, was announced, if there was any extra Pfizer doses the state had to lend to us that we could keep those appointments for people, and unfortunately that didn't happen. But anybody who had an appointment to get Johnson & Johnson at that Warwick site, they were moved essentially just 2 weeks forward, so next week, and we kept the same day and same time. So if you're registered for last Tuesday at 11 o'clock, then you would have been moved to this coming Tuesday at 11 o'clock. We're still, obviously we have to wait until we hear from the experts, and I think probably Commissioner Arcouche, because of her medical background, has more expertise on this certainly than I do. So I'll kind of defer to her as well about what she might be hearing.
Well, thanks, Commissioner Harvey. So I would just add that in Montgomery County, it was also very disruptive when the Johnson & Johnson distribution was paused. Just to put this in some perspective, we had about 16,000 appointments available last week, and we had to cut that back to about 8,500 or 9,000 when we lost the ability to use the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So we had to reschedule about 5,000 people. All of those individuals were immediately offered future appointments, and they were able to go online and schedule that. I think the thing that's been most frustrating for us is that because of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, we had actually opened up additional clinic sites in Montgomery County so that the Office of Public Health was running 7 different locations across the county, in addition to our mobile vaccine sites and some other efforts. So we're hoping that we will be able to reopen several clinics next week. But here's the most important thing as we watch what the FDA is doing and await their guidance. This is exactly what a data-driven, scientifically-based process looks like. And I do want people to know that this happens with new drugs and new devices routinely. The only reason that this pause is getting so much attention is because obviously we're in a really critical moment here fighting this coronavirus, and we all had a lot of hopes hanging on this new vaccine. But this is what the FDA does, and this is exactly what we want the FDA to do. If they see any hint of a problem, they hit the pause button, they gather all the information and the data about the individuals involved, and then they make a decision. And one of the first decision that they'll make is this even related to the vaccine, or was this just by chance that these very small, I think half a dozen cases occurred? And then they'll look at the characteristics of the patients, see if there's any similarities, and then they'll come out with guidance. So I find this process reassuring. And in fact, I have not yet been vaccinated. I have been waiting my turn, and I kind of got caught up in the cancellations last week. And as long as the pause is lifted and I am not in any way excluded based on the data that the FDA comes out with, I plan to get a Johnson & Johnson vaccine next week. So we'll see how that plays out, but I find the whole approach reassuring and exactly what it should be.
Thank you so much, commissioners. And Jim, I'm just going to turn it over to you briefly as well so you can speak to any concerns that Doylestown Health has faced with regard to the pause of the J&J vaccine.
Yes, I think that, thank you. I think that both commissioners expressed that very well, and I would just reinforce to the to your constituents, this is what we would want, is if there's any potential risk that might be picked up, that there's a pause, there's a look at the data to make sure, and then to re-engage. Just a couple of other points. The European Union has already looked at the data, and they have released J&J back into the full distribution from their perspective. So there's other parts of the world that have already gone through this review. The United States is being extra diligent, I think, and that's good. Another thing, just a point of reference, the great news is we got vaccine out and we're distributing it, but it's being administered under an emergency use authorization. And normally you wouldn't see, this all would have happened in research over years before the vaccine came out. Now we're doing it so we can get people vaccinated. And the good news is that the early results are, high, like 95%+ effectiveness of these vaccines. Even the J&J is a very high effectiveness. So please get a vaccine under any scenario. We have not seen any adverse outcomes that are from administration of the vaccine, of any of the vaccines at this point.
Thank you so much. And we're going to go to our first live caller. JP, who do we have?
All right. Well, let me remind our callers and our listeners first that if you have a question for Senator Collette and her guests on tonight's telephone town hall, press *3 on your telephone keypad. That's *3 if you'd like to ask a question. Our first question goes to Melissa in Horsham. Melissa, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guests.
Hello, Senator Collette and guests. How are you doing this evening? My question is, for the 15 and younger crowd, is there any idea, do we have any idea at all when they'll be able to be vaccinated?
Senator, I can hop in on that if you'd like.
Great. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is Val Arkush. So we do have some information, which is that the Pfizer team has submitted data to the Food and Drug Administration on clinical trials that were conducted in children down to age 12. And they submitted that data to the FDA about 2 weeks ago now. So if the FDA does its typical process, we can expect that probably 6 or so weeks after that data was submitted, that we will get a determination from the FDA if the Pfizer vaccine can be used under this same emergency use authorization in children down to age 12. Separately, there are additional trials that are starting up in children under 12. I was actually on a call today with some folks from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and they believe that those trials will not be complete until midsummer or maybe even late summer. And so that would be when the data would be submitted to the FDA for children that are under 12. So I think what we can expect, assuming that all the data looks good, is that maybe by some point in May, mid to late May, we may be able to start offering vaccination just with the Pfizer to children down to age 12. But it will probably be late summer or early fall before there will be anything available for younger than that.
Great. Thank you so much. And I know that's a big concern for, all of us in the community as we talk about issues of herd immunity, but also getting our kids back into the classroom full time in the fall. So thank you so much for that response. JP, who do we have next?
All right. Thank you, Senator. We're going to go to Diane in Bucks County. Diane, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guests.
Hi. I was wondering if Bucks County was going to be starting up a mobile vaccine. My 90-year-old mother lives with me, and getting her in and out of the house, car, is an ordeal. And I have heard other places starting something like that up. I was hoping Bucks County would be on that list.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. Yeah, that's a great question. We do have a list. We've been working with the Bucks County Area Agency on Aging has been putting together a list of seniors who, you know, are homebound or just aren't able to get out, which sounds like, you know, your mom's the perfect candidate for that. You can also call the Bucks County Health Department and let them know that, you know, she just isn't able to get out. And we are using that list. We do have what we're calling strike teams. And those teams are people, vaccinators, who are going out to locations, to people's homes to vaccinate people. The hope, the plan was for them to use Johnson & Johnson vaccine just because, you know, it's one visit and the person's vaccinated. They don't have to come back 3 weeks later. So that's, again, something else that we had planned to roll out last week but had to pause. So we are waiting to see what happens. Hopefully, again, getting some good news tomorrow, we hope, that we'll be able to launch that. So if you do want to call, you know, the Bucks County Health Department, and I'll just say the number again, 1-800-383-0371. Or if you want to go to buckscounty.org and click on the vaccination information button, and you'll see that number, and you can send them an email, or you can call them and just let them know that you'd like to have your mom added to the homebound list.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Harvey. Diane,
Senator. Can I just hop in with the same info for Montco? Yeah.
Please.
So Montgomery County is doing a very similar approach, and we are also asking constituents to call in and register for themselves or a family member who might be homebound. And you can just call that same hotline number I read earlier, which is 833-875-3967. And again, they're open Monday through Saturday.
Thank you so much. That's something that I've been really curious about as well. I'm sure Jim can speak to that. I've approached him and said, what can we do to partner with Doylestown Health also to make sure that we're getting out into the community? Jim, how have you guys been handling those kinds of requests?
Yeah, so we actually are coordinating with the county, which one of the things I want also all of your constituents to know, this is a time where hospitals and health systems may be competitors in some ways, but there's no competition about getting vaccine into people's arms and getting people vaccinated. We meet as a group called the BCHIP, Bucks County Health Improvement Partnership, with the county, and those lists are shared with all of the providers in the area, including Doylestown Health, and then we look to see who can help with the strike team process to get out there. We're identifying nurses who could go into homes to help do those vaccinations as we speak. So I think soon one of those targeted at-risk populations that we're trying to find a better way to get to that isn't easy, but we're going to find a way to do it.
Thank you so much. JP, who do we have on the line next?
Senator, we have Lauren in North Wales.
Hey.
Lauren, you're on live. Lauren, you're
Hello?
On live with Senator Collette.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. So my question is about my daughter who has had COVID, and I've recently read some research that seems rather new that if you've had a case of COVID that you don't need a second shot. She had one shot in Moderna. And so I just wanted to check on that to see if that is true or is it just better to just go and get that second shot? She was pretty sick with the first shot. So I'm not sure if you have any advice in terms of her reaction. I mean, she, you know, just kind of felt sick for, I think, 2 or 3 days. So just want to get your, if you have any take on what the right procedure is at this point.
Hey, Senator, I can jump in on that if you'd like.
Please, thank you.
This is Val Arkush. So what our Office of Public Health is recommending in a situation like this is first check with your daughter's doctor or healthcare provider. That's where I would start because that's the person that knows your daughter the best and could best advise on this. You are correct that there is some data that has come out very recently looking at whether or not a second shot is necessary in someone who's definitely had COVID, you know, diagnosed case of COVID. But as of at least, I believe as of today, I don't think anything has changed yet. The CDC is still recommending that people get both shots. It's possible that could change down the road, but right now that's the recommendation, which is why I would suggest that you talk with your doctor if that's possible.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Arkush. Does anyone else have anything to add? I've been reading the same articles, and I am, you know, I'm also curious about that, but thank you so much for that question. It's a good one.
Senator, I would just, another, just a context issue. This is a disease we're learning about as we go, which is really challenging for all of us. And so knowing how long someone has antibodies after an event is something that is actually being studied as we are moving forward. And that's why the commissioner mentioned that the CDC may modify its guidelines as we go forward. As more information comes available, we want to make sure that, that everyone has the best knowledge about that. I know on our website, I think on the other, on the health departments and on each of the other hospitals, on our websites, we are publishing the latest information available that you can go and look and or ask a question that we can follow up with you about.
That's great. Thank you so much for that information. I think that's helpful for people to have access to the information. JP, who do we have next?
Well, let me remind our listeners for a moment here that if you would like to join this conversation and you have a question for Senator Collette or her guests, press *3 on your telephone's keypad. That's *3 to join the conversation. Senator, we have David in Hatfield next. David, you're on live with Senator Collette.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I signed up for, the vaccine in Montgomery County about a month ago, and I haven't really received any updates on when I'll be able to get scheduled to get the COVID-19 vaccination shots. The question is, how long do I have to wait before recontacting the county?
So this is Val Arkush. Let me just ask, are you getting an email each week from the county with updates?
I believe I'm getting updates weekly, numbering systems.
Okay, good. Well, I asked that question because that means that your address doesn't have a typo in it or anything in the system. So as I mentioned earlier, because of the pause in the Johnson & Johnson, we went from about 16,000 appointments a week down to about 8,000 appointments a week. So hopefully we'll be able to ramp that back up very quickly next week. And so hopefully it shouldn't be too much longer before you hear. As of yesterday, we had about 18,000 people signed up in our list waiting to get an appointment. And, you know, if we're able to get back up to, you know, maybe 12 or 13 appointments next week and then back up to 15 or 16,000 the following week, we should be getting to you pretty quickly.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, David. JP, who do we have next?
All right, we're going to go to Joseph in Hatboro. Joseph, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guest.
Hello, how you doing today? I was calling about concern about the students going back to school each day with less than 3 feet. And when a student tests positive, you are getting so many students being sent home because of the less than 6 foot rule. Are there any talks to change the quarantine from, since we're having students less than 6 feet, to saying that the close contact needs to be less than 3 feet? Because otherwise, you're getting healthy students who sometimes are being held out by 10 days. Coming back, someone else re-exposed them to being out 10 days. I know one student who was out for 30 days from being exposed constantly, never caught COVID. So you were losing hundreds of students a day being sent home for almost 2 school weeks at a time. And that is more detrimental especially with the switch back and forth to in-school and out-school. So what can be done to keep the students in school who, or if they're both wearing masks, why is that still the 6 foot? Because before it was a 6 foot distance pre-mask, and then double masked people up there, and it's still 6 feet. So medically speaking, that those students should still be safe, even if they're less than 6 feet with the mask on, that they shouldn't have to quarantine in a school setting.
Do our county commissioners have any comment on that?
Yeah, I could comment about Montgomery County. So our Office of Public Health continues to follow the guidelines of the Pennsylvania Department of Health and the CDC, which still recommend that anyone within 6 feet of someone who's tested positive for COVID is considered a close contact. We have a couple of projects going on right now in our schools. Some of our school districts, and remember, I just want to remind everybody that our public schools are governed by school boards that are elected by the folks in that school district. And so some of our school districts in Montgomery County are keeping, for the most part, still keeping students 6 feet apart, in which case nobody has to quarantine. Other school districts have decided to go ahead and allow students to be closer than 6 feet, in which case there is more of a need for quarantine. Some of the school districts that are doing that are part of a project where they are allowing students to do what's called test out of quarantine. That means that on day 5 or 6 after exposure, as long as that student isn't having any symptoms and they haven't had any additional exposure to someone who's positive, they can be tested for COVID, and if they're negative, they can return to school. So that you could check in your school district to see if that's happening. Another project that is just getting underway is a project that we're doing together with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and they are coming in to see, to actually do some mapping within classrooms and see how far apart students are, and they're comparing the students to a student that tested positive, and they're measuring distances, and they're doing some things to try to get a better handle on what the risk might actually be. So we're trying to get answers to those questions, and the health department and the CDC and CHOP are trying to get some, you know, evidence-based, data-driven answers to the very questions that you're asking, sir. Those are questions that we have all been wrestling with for the entire school year.
Yeah, thank you. And that's kind of, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Senator.
I was just going to say that's something that my colleagues and I in Harrisburg have been talking about a lot, ways that we can make sure that we're getting the best guidance from PDE and from our IUs so that we are really providing the best guidelines to our school boards so that they're making these really good decisions for all of our kids. I, you know, as many of you know, I have an elementary school age son myself, and so I know that it's a real priority for me to have him get back in the classroom full time as safely and, you know, quickly as possible. So we're always looking for that best guidance, absolutely. JP, who's our next question from?
Our next question will be from Jerome in Lower Moreland Township. Jerome, you're on live with Senator Collette and guests.
Hello. I was wondering if you've had many patients who've had vaccine reactions that would prevent giving a second dose with the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine.
So let me just see. Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question. Is there guidance on that would somebody having a severe enough reaction to their first shot that they would be advised not to get their second shot?
I think he was asking, Senator, he's dropped off the line, but I think he was asking whether we've been seeing a lot of reactions and do they prevent people from getting a second one if they had a reaction to the first.
Oh, I see. You know, I can say that the clinics I volunteered at, I do first and second dose clinics, and I've seen, you know, really good turnout. So I haven't had that experience personally as a nurse administering shots, but I turn that question over to our panel. I'd love to hear about the experiences that you all have been seeing in our counties and in our facilities.
Senator, this is Jim Brexler. We have not, the question of a reaction that created a problem for someone even to get a second dose, we have not seen that. People do have differential reactions, and some are sick for a little bit of time. Honestly, part of what everyone should know is that that means that the vaccine's working. It's not a bad thing, that's a good thing. But we have not had reactions to the point of not being allowed to have the second dose. We've been able to administer, I'm not aware of any second doses that have not been administered due to that.
Yeah, and this is Commissioner Arkush. We have not had, we've had people that have had mild reactions, you know, at the clinic. Like we've had a few people get a little lightheaded and things like that. But I'm not aware of anyone who has been advised to not come back for their second dose or come back. I mean, we have almost 100% return for second doses, if not 100.
Yeah, and I can echo that in Bucks, similar situation in Bucks County. Yep.
Great. Thank you.
All right, before we go to our next caller, let's remind our listeners that if you have a question for Senator Collette or her guest tonight, press star 3 on your telephone's keypad. That's star 3 to join the conversation about vaccines and the plans going forward over the next few months. Our next caller is Cheryl in Montgomery County. Cheryl, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guests.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Unfortunately, my husband died November 18th, and I moved from Bucks County to Montgomery County. I'm still involved in a widow's support group. However, with everybody getting the vaccine, the group leader put out a letter saying that I could not attend the widow's support group at the Doylestown Castle Park with a mask, 6 feet apart, because I don't have a vaccine certification. With HEPA laws, is that legal for somebody to request that kind of information?
Well, Cheryl, first let me just extend my sympathies and, tell you how sorry I am at your loss. And, you know, one of the things that we can talk about for sure is what private groups are doing to ensure the safety of all of the members that are involved. It's a question that I'm happy to turn over to our commissioners who might be able to talk a little bit more about those vaccine cards that we're getting and where and when we may be asked to present them and under what circumstances. But the experiences that I've had with organizations is that typically they set the rules for how they want to have members participate. I would be hopeful that if they were saying you weren't able to participate in person, that they would have a virtual option that you might be able to at least dial in and participate.
Well, we're doing that
way.
Now.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to turn it over to hear if our county commissioners or Jim, if any of you have heard of anything that might give us more guidance on those vaccine cards and sort of proving our vaccine status as we move forward. It's a really tricky area for sure.
And the people that got vaccinated, aren't they protected from me who's wearing one mask, possibly two masks, sitting on my own private picnic chair, 6 feet, 7 feet apart? I mean, am I that much of a threat to them?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things
that
we have been hearing, guidance about being outside and wearing your mask and staying socially distanced. I do also want to say that our acting secretary of the Department of Health at the state level, Allison Bean, she did say today that the governor doesn't have an intention of doing vaccine passports. So, I'm not sure that I can speak directly to whether or not that group is acting effectively or appropriately with regard to you, but it does seem like there are some discrepancies on whether or not your participation should be, accepted and welcome. But again, I'll turn it over to our other panelists if they have anything to add at our county levels or at our facilities, if you've heard of anything
like this and can offer any guidance to Cheryl.
Sure. Yeah, I'll jump in. And first, Cheryl, you know, please accept all our sympathies for your loss. I mean, I think all of us have known somebody, at least one person who's been lost over the past, year plus. And so we definitely keep people like you and families like yours in our thoughts. It is difficult, as Senator Collette said, because this is a private group. They can kind of set their own rules with this regard. And I do think, as Jim Brexler said earlier, the problem that we faced with this virus since it started was that it is so new, that it is such uncharted territory. And as we move into this vaccination, or as we're in this vaccination phase, and we're nearing what I think is going to be the next few months, I think we're going to get rapid acceleration. And I think the president's right there. I think we're going to be able to have a more pleasant 4th of July. I mean, it does raise the issue that you're talking about, that, are we going to be able or allowed, or who's going to be able to reinforce and check on who's been vaccinated, who hasn't been, and where the rules lie with that. I would certainly encourage you to take a look. I'm sure there are some other support groups that would love to have someone like you who wants to get involved and who wants to help others and wants to, kind of recognizes the value of working with people who have been through similar circumstances and the value of working together to get everybody through that. As for this particular group, I don't know them specifically, but I would like to think that they would be open to keeping you involved in some way, shape, or form.
Cheryl, this is Jim Brexler. Let me just add another thought process here. I think people are trying to find a way to be safe, so that's the good thing, right? But the variation of what that means is going to be pretty great until there's really more standardization here. Some comparisons, perhaps. I have children that participate in sports, and what we have to do as parents to go to those events is we stay 6 feet apart and we have to wear masks. The kids who are playing don't have to wear masks while they're playing, but they do when they go to the sideline. So it does seem like this seems to be an added level of safety that your moderator is asking from what maybe some other groups that might be a comparison or a similar comparison. But what I would offer to you is that I know we will, and I'm sure there are others who would be glad to speak to the moderator or have the moderator contact us, and we can give you the latest guidance on what are safe practices, what are the CDC guidelines and the state of Pennsylvania guidelines, but also what other groups are doing. And maybe with some additional education, we might be able to open that up for you a little bit more. The support groups are so important at this time for you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. JP, who do we have next?
Next up is Marianne of Hatfield. Marianne, you're on live with Senator Collette and Guest.
Hi, yes. So this is kind of tail on to Cheryl's thing, and my most sincere condolences, Cheryl. I wanted to kind of, I'm a little confused as to what exactly is the deal with the vaccine. So my understanding was the vaccine was only really supposed to keep you from dying, okay, from getting really, really sick and in the hospital. It's not actually preventing you from catching COVID. Am I correct in that, or have things changed with this whole vaccine thing? Because I have gotten the vaccine because I don't want my family to like freak out that I'm in the hospital, so. but yeah, I mean, if I'm vaccinated, am I still going to be able to transmit COVID if I happen to catch it and maybe not even realize it?
Well, thank you, Marianne, first and foremost, for getting your vaccine and for your question. Dr. Arkush, I'm wondering if you can provide any insight just to help us understand more of, why we're all getting vaccinated here.
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. And I am going to start my answer by just reminding what's already been said on this call tonight is we are still learning about this disease. So you are completely correct that by getting vaccinated, you pretty much eliminate the chance that you would be hospitalized or die from COVID-19. And that is why we are all getting vaccinated. The chances of getting a serious case of COVID that would require you to be hospitalized or cause your demise is virtually zero. However, no vaccine, you know, measles, mumps, flu, no vaccine is 100% effective. And it is possible to still get a mild case of the coronavirus even if you're vaccinated, but not so bad that you're going to end up hospitalized or dying. Now, here's what we still don't know. What we don't know yet is if somebody has a mild case of COVID-19 who's been vaccinated, they may or may not realize that they've been sick or that they are sick. We don't know yet what is the likelihood of them transmitting that disease to someone else. That is currently under investigation, and we just don't have an answer to that question yet. I'm hoping within a few months we do, because obviously this question is a very, very important one and on everybody's mind. But for now, we don't know, and that is why the recommendations are still that we keep wearing masks, and we'd be very careful about social distancing, particularly if you're, you know, one person's vaccinated and one person is not, because it may be that the person who is vaccinated could potentially transmit that virus, but we just don't have the answer to that yet.
Thank you so much. JP, who do we have next?
Up next is Denise in Hatboro. Denise, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guests.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone on the line, for all your hard work. It's greatly appreciated. I just was wondering, we continue to hear that the state of Pennsylvania seems to be in the top 3 to 5 states with increased numbers and variants. I think the numbers discussed today sound very good for our particular county, so I just don't know if this issue is in the far west of our county or north, if there's any information on updates on that information.
Thank you, Denise. It's a great question, and I think there's two things that I'm hearing in your question. One of them is really how we're doing overall, Pennsylvania as a whole, with regard to our neighboring states getting vaccinated and keeping up with our keeping our COVID cases down, and then how we're doing overall from county to county. And I know that our county commissioners have done, and I'm sure, Jim, you've done the same work, talking with our partners, other providers, other counties, to get a better feel for how it looks elsewhere. So if any of you could speak to really the county-to-county difference with regard to getting vaccines and how we're doing in keeping our COVID numbers down across the Commonwealth.
Well, I'll start from Monco. So I gave our numbers about vaccines earlier, and we're actually doing pretty well. When it comes to COVID cases, the news is not so good. We are still seeing a lot of cases in Montgomery County. We're averaging about 200 cases a day, and our hospitalizations have been going up for the last several weeks. We today had over 230 people hospitalized in a Montgomery County hospital with COVID-19. So it is just a reminder that we are not out of the woods yet. In Montgomery County, we have seen a pretty rapid rise of the British or UK variant. That's that B.1.1.7 variant, which is felt to be 1.5 times more contagious than the original coronavirus. And we do believe that that is contributing to the large number of cases that we're continuing to see. So I do want to just urge people to continue to be very careful. If you're not around people that aren't from your home or aren't vaccinated, you really need to still have a mask on and watch that social distancing.
Thank you so much. I think we have time for one more question. JP?
All right, we're going to go to Alexander from Southampton. Alexander, you're on live with Senator Collette and her guests.
Hello, Senator and guests. I really appreciate your time. My question is, I feel that possibly I may have had COVID way before we even shut down, you know, December of 2019. I just thought I had, you know, a bad flu, and it just seemed to last a little longer, but I didn't know what it was, and I never got tested. There weren't tests yet, of course, at that time, and I never actually bothered. I am getting my vaccine in about a week, but my question is there a way to know if, you know, this far out, if I had, if that was COVID way back then, like, would I show antibodies this late, you know, after over a year of possibly having it? And if so, if someone does have antibodies for it, are you just as protected as with the antibodies alone as someone that is vaccinated, or more protected or less protected or equally protected? I'm not sure if such numbers or research exists, but maybe you can answer that. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexander. It's a really good question. We've heard a lot of discussion about antibodies, so I'll turn it over to our panelists if they have any insight here.
Yeah, well, I'll just say real quickly, thank you, Alexander, for it's good. First, it's good to hear if you did happen to have it. It's good to hear that you you obviously managed to sort of beat it back. Thank you for, you know, signing up to get the vaccine, and I think that's always a good thing, even if you're not totally sure if you had it or not. I'm the only person on the panel who doesn't have a medical background, so that's kind of the extent of my expertise. I'll let Jim and Dr. Akush go into more of the technical details.
Thank you.
Dr. Akush, I'm going to let you close out for this question. Let me just add one quick couple of data points. There are tests that you can take to determine whether or not you have antibodies from a previous exposure, and it will tell you whether or not you had COVID or not. I know a number of people that I'm aware of that thought they might have. They were tested. Turns out they did not. But it's worthy of checking. Just an interesting anecdote for you. There are studies now of people who survived, 100-year-old people who survived the Spanish flu pandemic in 1917. And they now, because of the testing we have, they've been tested, and it turns out they still retain the antibodies to protect them from the Spanish flu these many years later. So what we don't know, though, is how long will the antibodies in this disease to fight this disease last. That is something that time just hasn't been there long enough for us to know. But there are encouraging signs that there are still strong retention of antibodies and protection of this disease for those who got vaccinated early in the process. And Commissioner, you probably know even more than I do on that, but I know I heard some data points about that I thought were pretty interesting.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So you could absolutely get an antibody test, and there's different kinds of antibody tests. So one test tests for IgM, and the other one tests for IgG. And you would want to make sure that you got a test that looked for the IgG antibody. Some tests do them both at the same time, but you want to make sure that whatever test you would get looks for IgG, because IgG is the antibody that tends to be detected in the blood after some time has gone by. IgM is the first antibody that your body produces, and that tends to go away pretty quickly. So that would be one test. But even if that test was negative, we don't know for sure, because we don't really know how long antibodies are detectable in your bloodstream. That doesn't mean, given what, you know, exactly what you just heard, that if you were reinfected again, your body might still be able to mount a response. So you probably have some protection if you did indeed have COVID. However, all of the data that I have read about this particular issue is that I've seen uniform recommendation that even if you did have COVID and you know you had COVID, that you still get vaccinated because the degree of protection that you have isn't really measurable. And there's just some concern, particularly with all the variants out there, that you will be safer if you do get vaccinated. So that is the current recommendation, that you do get vaccinated even if you know you had COVID.
Thank you. And, you know, I just want to wrap us up here. It's been a really incredible and informative hour with all of you. Thank you to everyone who stayed on the line to participate in our telephone town hall discussion, to those of you who were able to listen in, and those of you who asked us such great questions this evening. Thank you, of course, to Jim Brexler, Commissioner Harvey, and Commissioner Arkush for taking the time out of your very busy schedules to be with us this evening. If you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and my staff and I will get back to you. If you have any additional questions or concerns, you can always email me at senatorcolette@pasenate.com, or you can call my office at 215-368-1429, or visit my website at senatorcolette.com. And again, we will have all of the information from our panelists that they gave us posted to that website too, so you'll have access to that. Goodbye, everyone, and stay well, and thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for participating in Senator Maria Collette's telephone town hall. You've been a great audience, and thank you for sharing your evening with us.